So, for the record, your name, first name, last, how you say it, how you spell it, please.
Darlene Stonechild, D-A-R-L-E-N-E, S-T-O-N-E-C-H-I-L-D.
Okay, so we have all these questions in front of us, but first, just tell me about your experiences from residential school, from what you can remember, the being taken away, your first day there, your first year, anything big that sticks out in your mind right now, just to start off with.
Okay, and I remember being a little girl in about 1965, and that's when I was taken with to Gordon's Residential School, and that's where my siblings were. My older siblings attended school there, and I was taken there with my older sister Joanne, and we stayed there, and but I only lasted I think a week, and then they had to come and get me, my grandparents, because I cried and cried and cried, and I wouldn't eat. So yeah, they come and got me, but the following year I went back to residential school, and I stayed there 7 years in Gordon's Residential School. And when my 7 years was up, I could no longer go back to school there. So, but I wanted to go back to school there because it kind of felt a little safer than being at home. And I had food there because we're very poor at home. So, but there were some awful things that happened to me in residential school, and I carried that through my life and passed it on to some of my children, because I didn't learn how to love them properly, like hug them and tell them I love them and all that. So that followed me through my adult life, and and then went into domestic violence with my husband, late husband there, and I hardly talk about it, the residential school stuff, because I talked to my therapist about it and told her, and kind of just left it there, and then left it with the Creator when I went to SWIT. So yeah, let's carry on with my life and do the best I could. But I realized that I had shortcomings with raising my children, and I didn't give them the care that they needed, to show them the culture or the anything like that. It was not really good, and so they turned to drugs, and their lives ended with the drug use and stuff, abuse. Yeah, but I've learned to raise my grandchildren. They all left the grandchildren to me, four grandchildren, and so I raised them in a sober way, and the best I could now. So they're all doing good for themselves, except for the oldest grandson, that is trying to make it better for himself. But him too, he struggles with the abusive partner he has, and drug wise. Yeah, so.
Was Gordon's the only residential school you attended?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What was your typical day like at residential school?
Well, we'd get up in the morning, and we had to make our beds, and then we'd go down, wash and that, and then we'd go down for breakfast, and we had to line up in breakfast there, and porridge and toast most of the time. And then we'd go to church, and then we'd be out at church in within half an hour, and then we'd go to our school, or like the classrooms, and then classrooms, teaching, and then have lunch, and then go back to class after lunch. After lunch, some of us would just eat fast, and then we'd go get to play in the playground, and that was fun. So you got to see your siblings there. And then we'd go back to class, and then afternoon, after class, about 4 o'clock, we'd we'd be able to have some fun time in the playground and that, and then we'd have to come back and wash up for supper, and we have supper, and then we'd have some free time if there was no program scheduled in the evenings. Yeah, and then we'd have to be in bed by 8 o'clock. Even when the sun was still up, we had to go to bed at that time. Yeah.
Were weekends any different?
No, weekends were still the same. Yeah, still the same. But we had a little bit more freedom on the weekends because we were allowed to participate with some of the staff that were working at the school that lived in the community, and they would take us for a hike to their place and have a wiener roast, and then we come back and stuff like that. Yeah, it was, they were kind to us. Yeah.
What about holidays? Like which holidays did you celebrate holidays at all?
Christmas or Easter? The only time I came home for holidays was summer holidays and Christmas. Yeah. Those were the only times I came back for holidays. Other holidays, I just stayed in the school, and I was. I have relatives in Punnett Gordon, so they would kind of look after me too, and my siblings. So,
So you mentioned some of your siblings attended school with you. What about some of the other students who attended with you? Do you remember their names?
I remember the Red Stars from Carlisle, and Akachucks from Carlisle, the Creeleys from here, and some kids from James Smith, Sanderson's. And and some other kids that were from Gordon's, like the McNabs and the Bitternoses and the Geddeses and that. Yeah.
Any recollections of them? Memories from them? What you used to do? Hang out together or?
No, it's just to hang out with the crew. I think her name was Pratt. Yeah. Or Queer's aunts, one of them they went by, and she was can I mention names?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Deb Pratt, Deb Anderson, Weaver's mom there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, went to school with them and her sisters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of fun with them because they lived right across the lake, and we always going across the lake over there and just hang out, and it was fun time. Yeah, because the mom and dad were always good to us. And some of the teachers, that's where I had difficulty with some of the teachers. Like, some of them were very mean, and some of them were good. They taught us, good skills and that. And the administrator was the worst one. The male staff were the worst ones that did abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse and stuff like that. Yeah. I got strapped a couple times from the administrator, because I ran away.
Do you remember his name?
Yeah, Mr. Starr, yeah.
Okay.
William Starr, yeah. And he strapped me a couple times because I ran away. And, I got with the big strap. Leather strap, and we hold out our hands, and he'd hit us and all that stuff like that, until we cried, right? Mm-hmm. And the more you got hit, the more you'd cry, right? But sometimes I would hold in my cry, and I'd just let him hit me and all that stuff like that. And one time I fell down, and I just pretended to faint so I wouldn't get hit anymore. I fell down, and then he just come towards me. And I remember him kicking me in the ass, and that's when I hurt, and then for sure I couldn't get up for a while. Yeah, but that was one of my awful memories of that. Yeah.
What about the male teachers? Was it along the same lines?
Oh yeah, the male teacher. Yeah, he would. He was Mr. Blakeney. He was a very mean man, but he would hit us on the head with a ruler, the yardstick he called it, and he'd hit every student on the head, and that was in his classroom, like very lightly first, and then after, if we couldn't answer questions, he'd hit us harder, you know. And I witnessed him breaking a yardstick over one of the boys' head, because he talked back or said something that was out of line, according to Mr. Blakeney. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, the male men, the staff, the supervisors, like, yeah, they were not mean, but they kind of leered us. This one man, his name was Mr. Barlow. He was a short man, and he was in charge of the junior boys. And he would look after the canteen, right? They had canteen like once a day or every 2 days, I forget. But anyways, there was canteen there, and I never had any money for canteen, you know, and I just stand around and wish and stuff like that. Yeah, there was times that some of my friends would buy me something, the odd chips or the odd pop or something. Yeah, but I always hung around there, and he eventually lured me into the teacherage, and not knowing what was going to happen, I went there, and he said that I could have canteen for the rest of the duration that I stayed there. And anyways, he lured me into that, and so I thought that I was going to get canteen free, right? So then, yeah, he lured me into the teacherage, and then that's where he bothered me, and he just basically bothered me in that. And
was it just that one teacher, that one, or were there others?
No, it was just him that did that to me, yeah. And I guess down the road, through that experience, I learned that's when I learned how to use my body to get things. You know, because I didn't know any better. So when further down the road in life, after I left residential school, I got the canteen stuff I wanted, but I had it with a price, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so down the road there, when I come out of residential school, I moved to Regina, and that's when I tried to sell my body for stuff to survive. Yeah, and sometimes it was worth it, you know, that I got money and stuff and ate and stuff like that, but most of the time it was awful. Yeah, because I learned that, you know, you have to get the money first from, yeah, the predators or whatever. Yeah, and then later on I met an elderly man, and that was my children's father, and he was a lot older for me, older, and he had money, and he had a car, he had a home, and he had liquor, and that's how I was lured into that, because like I said, I grew up in a poor home and never had nothing, so yeah. But that's where my children come from, and yeah, went through abuse with him and stuff like that, and yeah. Yeah, and then after I got, once I got counseling and all that, I realized that, you know, I can't do that for the rest of my life. And I didn't want to see my grandchildren make those kind of decisions, for, you know, what I didn't want to do. I didn't want to do it anymore, and my grandchildren.
What was it like in the dorms at school?
Oh, we'd have to brush our teeth and wash up and go to bed. We had that old salty toothpaste that we had to brush our teeth with around a around a big sink, you know, rubber pedal there, and the water would come out. Yeah, that's how we used to have to brush our teeth before we went to bed and wash, and we go to bed. Yeah, and not so much when I was in junior girls, but I heard stories about the stuff that went on in the seniors and intermediates. Then I went to the intermediates. I eventually went to intermediates, and that's when there was some of the staff members would come in drunk. The staff members, I talk about the child care workers, yeah. They'd come in drunk at after hours, and you know, they're supposed to be looking after us in the dorm, and here they were abusing us physically and sexually, yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, you'd hear cries from certain kids, you know. I don't know, they seem to pick on certain kids, yeah. And the ones that wet the bed are the ones that got punished more. You know, I noticed that if you wet the bed the night before and then the next morning you had wet stuff, then that's when you'd get bothered at the nighttime. Yeah, so it was really hard because I need to go to the bathroom some nights. I need to go to the bathroom more often. And I learned to hold it in, and then therefore I got, throughout the years, I developed bladder problems and stuff like that, yeah. So, yeah, it was pretty bad.
Hearing the other kids crying like that, how often did that happen? Was that, was it once a week, or was it?
I think maybe it mostly happened on the weekends, when the other staff members weren't around, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And it would help maybe once a month. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
So you mentioned porridge and toast for breakfast. Mm-hmm. What else did you eat for supper or for lunch?
Spaghetti and hamburgers and hot dogs and that, yeah.
Okay.
Once in a while we'd get turkey and roast beef and mashed potatoes and stuff like that, yeah.
More special occasions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I hear a lot of survivors now won't eat pasta or won't eat this because that's all they eat in school.
Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to overcome the porridge, but now I'm in my, I can have porridge now and toast. Yeah.
Mm. How about church service? Was it instilled? Was it pushed? Was it? Were you made to, obviously?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had to. After breakfast, we had to clean up and then the dining room. Then we'd have to race up to the chapel, where everybody would attend church. And then it would, like I said, it would last about half an hour, you know. But that half an hour was kneeling on your knees, right, and praying and doing whatever they told us to do, yeah. And we had to wear dresses that time too, and so it was hard for us girls, you know, to kneel on those pews with bare knees, yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was difficult. And on Sundays, they'd have church more longer, like maybe about 2.5 hours. And we had to pray and pray. And then we'd have Sunday school, and we had to talk about what was said in the sermon and all that, and it was a quiz, like, you know, what did you hear and what did he say and stuff like that, and
I heard a lot of students who were forced, they weren't able to use your own language. Did you have your own language, or was it taken away? Did you see this?
I know there are some people, some kids from up north, Fort LaCorne and James Smith there, and some people from Peter Valentine there too. Yeah, and they use their language, but they weren't allowed to speak it over there. Yeah, they get punished. Yeah. But I myself didn't speak Cree or anything. Yeah, I was taken away too young to learn from my grandparents, and my dad didn't speak it, so yeah.
What about education-wise? Did you feel that you got an education of sorts?
Yeah, I think I did, yeah. That was the one thing that came out of there, is that I had got an education, and I felt that I got the... the tools, I guess, to read and write and stuff like that.
Okay.
But yeah, but like me dropping out of school that years down the road, I still didn't properly fill out my education. Yeah.
So you mentioned this a little before when we started about your mental health and how the residential school experience affected that. Let's talk a little about your physical health. Obviously, it didn't sound like you're getting a lot of nutrition on a regular basis. Do you feel like that affected your physical growth?
No.
Obviously, you're probably feeling that now, though,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
If you had proper nutrition when you were that young, you wouldn't feel as rough as you do now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Plus all the other stuff that went
on. Yeah, yeah. I think my physical physical condition, like, I think it was okay, yeah, because in Gordon's, we had field meets, you know, against Muskogee and stuff, different other schools, yeah, and I was a cross country runner, yeah, and so, yeah. I participated in a lot of sports, yeah. I think it was okay, that level, yeah.
You mentioned how it affected your mental health, your emotional well-being, like from day one right through until you're still dealing with that today. Maybe you can expand a little bit on I guess, how it affected your emotions. Because I know in my case with my mom, she never hugged you. There was really no love, right?
Mm-hmm.
That from my when my mom came out and had her own family, it wasn't really a big hugging family.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back now, it wasn't her; it was what she went through
mm-hmm.
in school that she mm-hmm. had brought through. So I'm just wondering if you know, and there's always different degrees, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned a little bit how it affected you in your further life, but I guess at the time. How did you deal with that? Like, what did you do to get through that?
Well, I just made friends in school, right? And they were my comfort zones, and because I don't know if you know this or not, but my mother left me when I was 2 months old, and she left because of the drugs and alcohol and the abuse that she went through. So further down the line, I didn't know my mom till I was 11 years old, and that's when I met her, and she just became another lady in my life further down the road till I made amends with her, and then we were friends when she died, yeah. And so I guess I didn't get that full attention from my grandparents or my dad. My dad was an alcoholic, and he was, you know, tended to his life, and yeah. So, yeah, that when I went to residential school, I I found friends, you know, that were in the same situation as me, and, you know, and we just comfort each other and stuff like that, yeah. But, like, down the road, I didn't have people in my life to show me any kind of love or support or anything, but, yeah.
With your siblings with you there, I guess that helped a little bit. Did that affect it as well?
Mm-hmm, yeah. My siblings were there, yeah, and I seen stuff that happened to my siblings, you know, and this one time I got into trouble when I was a little girl, and my older sister, Faye, she went after the matron, and they had a fight, you know, because the matron had slapped me in the head and stuff like that. So, yeah, they were always on my back, and then my sister Joanne, of course, she was always my protector, even at home. Like when we come home on holidays, she was always there to protect me because of one of my dad's brothers sexually bothering yeah, the kids, and my sister Joanne always took the whatever it was going to happen to me, she would take it, you know. So I owe her a lot, and because she's the one that saved me from getting sexually abused from my uncle, and that's why she could never overcome that, and she drank herself to death, yeah, and going to that grave. So yeah.
Are you doing okay?
Mm-hmm. You
doing okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Last few questions about the Five Hills School and Farm. Do you recall the school grounds out here on Elkneys?
Not really, no.
No? So you never really visited the school when it was in operation?
No.
Okay. Okay, do you remember the cemetery associated with the school, mm-hmm. where that is, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any stories? Can you recall any stories about the school and the cemetery?
Well, we lived up by the pines there. That's where we grew up, and where Mona Creeley lives now. Yeah, that's where we lived. My dad and us, we had the home there, and we were always told by my mushroom and Bill Creeley that we weren't allowed to go around that area, but on the other side of the lake, which is now where the burial grounds is, we were told not to go around there because of burial sites. That's what we were told when we were kids, yeah. So we never did go around there, yeah.
Okay. Do you recall any memories of people dying or injuries at that school? No? Okay, no worries. So, as you are, we have the new push to memorialize at that land. Any ideas as to what you'd like to do to honor the school attendees?
I would like to see the names of all those people, but it's like through the research that I've been doing, I've been going up dead ends, you know? So, yeah. Yeah.
How do you think they'll help the survivors and the families by seeing something like that?
I think it would bring them a little bit like a little bit closer, you know, so you know, and knowing that their ancestors were laid to rest, and that we're looking after their graves and stuff like that, yeah.
Your memories,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's what this whole IRS project is about, like to not to rehash all the wounds again, but maybe like for one last time, and then that'd be it. Then,
yeah.
And now we're all healing
again. Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I know that's a generational trauma, and now I'm I like to see generational healing, right? So mm-hmm. it's not negative, it's positive now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Anything else you like that?
No, just that through my experience with the residential school, I come to terms where I've accepted, and that I can't, I got to move on in life and for the betterment of myself and my health, and for my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren, and you know, but I sat down with my grandchildren and I told them where I came from, right? Like my life story and all that, and about their grandfather, right? And the abuse I went through with them, and yeah. And I said, that's one thing I didn't want you guys to see, I said, was the abuse, I said. So that's why I quit drinking when my first grandson was born. Because I was turned into an ugly person when I drank and got very violent, yeah. And everything just came out. So, yeah, I didn't want them to see that, and I didn't want my great-grandchildren to see that. So, yeah, and then I sat down and talked with my grandchildren, and I told them, you know, I was always told to keep stuff inside of me, you know, keep stuff inside of me. I said, I don't want you guys to be like that. I said, I want you to go out in this world and be the best you can. I said, I know you lost your mothers. I said, but you got to carry on. I said, you know, and so I'm teaching them in a positive way. And, you know, and I'm not perfect. I have my downfalls and everything like that. But, you know, I told them, that's when you ask for forgiveness from Creator God to let you carry on the next day and say what you have to do and do what you have to do. Yeah. Yeah. So through all this trauma and stuff that happened in my past, I think, like I told you, I gave it over to the Creator, gave it to Sweat, you know, and I gave it to my psychiatrist. Yeah, because I was in counseling for 6 years, and I kind of thank her for helping me through everything, yeah, and walking away from the abuse, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't change the past, right? You can't change it no matter how much you try, but you can't change it. It happened, and all we can do is learn from it and forgive. And that's a big part in my life right now is acceptance, right? And that's how I go on every day, is that I accepted my girl's death, you know, and that's a part of life. Life and death is... You know, is life, that's life. Nobody lives forever, right? That's what I come to my conclusion, yeah. Mm. Yeah, so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's all we need for that. That's good enough. Mm-hmm. But what I'd like to do is to leave on a better memory. Could you share with me a humorous story about your family? Or something that you'd like to share that always maybe something you think about that makes you smile, makes you laugh a little. Because what I'd like to do, with your permission, is once I talk with all the survivors, we'll get all the serious stuff away. I'm asking each and everyone to give me a humor story about their families, and then I'll put that together with a little podcast saying Oakney's family memories with Patty, and then you'll say, "Oh, I remember this one time where da 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 da." So anyway. It's like when we're all calm and casual and just chatting away, all of a sudden somebody comes up with a really deadly story. And I'm thinking, oh, I wish I could have recorded that.
Well, I don't know. Well,
whichever you want. If you want to share it. Yeah.
We always celebrate the girls' birthday, when their birthday, and we have a big meal, right? And this one time, I always get the boys to... bless the food, and then put out a spirit dish, right, for the girls, and on their birthdays. And this one time, we did this spirit dish and everything, and no, the boys didn't take it out, and it sat there. I think it was, for maybe about 4 days, and on the table, and everybody would just bypass it, and then finally, Caleb or one of Jordan says, "Well, what are you going to do with that spirit dish?" And I said, "You guys were supposed to take it out." And they said, "Well, you better throw it in the garbage because it's all moldy now." And I said, "Well, you guys are supposed to take it out." And they said, "Oh, well, I don't think you can starve in heaven." That is Jordan, yeah. Yeah. That was funny.
That's good. That's good.